Hi, welcome to More Than a Song. Our show's focus is on West Texas music singers and songwriters off stage and on the air. We'll have behind-the-music conversations on exploring their life, their songs, the creative process, and more. I'm your host, Carrie Banks, with producer Chuck Luck. Today, we'll be talking with singer-songwriter Jim Dixon. Welcome to More Than a Song.
How do, Carrie?
Born in Lubbock, right? But you grew up in New Mexico.
I was born here in Lubbock. I spent a little time in Corpus Christi, but was raised mostly in Hobbs.
What got you started playing music?
I was always interested in music, even at the age of 9. You know, my brother played guitar. I wanted to know how to play, and we practiced and played, and my family was somewhat musical.
What were you listening to growing up in New Mexico?
You know, in junior high, you know, John Cougar Mellencamp was cool, but I had to listen to him kind of in the closet because all my friends were older and they frowned upon you not listening to Blackfoot, Molly Hatchet, and those guys, you know.
And you started working professionally at a very young age.
Yeah, my dad died when I was a teenager, and I kind of knew enough on the bass to play. There was plenty of gigs. The little town I grew up in had like 12 nightclubs, 6 nights a week music. I had landed at a gig called George's Lounge, and these old guys needed me, and they kind of took me in, taught me how to play. And they were amazing. Still to this day, I still mark them as some of the most amazing cats I've ever played with. I remember a bass player walked out in the middle of the night one night, and they needed somebody to fill in the night, and I played, and they were like, man, you're just terrible. but, you know, we really don't have a choice, and we're going to audition bass players tomorrow. We hope somebody will show up, but if not, are you available, you know? So I showed up to the audition and rehearsal, and luckily was the only one that showed up. And they were like, do you notice anything about the way we play versus how you play as a kid? And I'm like, no idea. And they're like, we don't suck. If not another bass player shows up, we sure need you tonight. But I had to study real hard. And by the end of the week, I had the gig. It was 4 nights a week, George's Lounge on Main Street.
And you were playing professionally, going to school and working.
I had a job washing dishes in the morning and playing gig at night, barely making C's and D's in school, if that would be a little bit of an exaggeration with that. And I managed that all the way up to my senior year. And in the last part of my senior year, I didn't finish. I hopped on a bus and took off on what they used to call the Caravan East Circuit. Toby Keith was on that circuit, too, as a kid, you know. Right. And I was lucky. I had Ryan Bingham live down the street from me. He was a teenager. He was a kid, like, learning songwriting from me, which was probably not the best teacher. But I had the only studio from there to Norm Petty up in Clovis, but he lived just down the road. He would come record there, and we had a little demo shop where...
You also worked with the very famous producer,
T-Bone Barnett. Yeah, he was a neat man. I wished I would have been a more of a smarter adult. I didn't really know what was going on. I was just asked to record it.
And you started writing songs at what age?
My mom would play the piano, and I was 9. I'd make up words and melodies to her piano playing. She was the first to point out, well, that's what they do. That's how they write songs. When I got my teenage years, it got a bit serious. And we were lucky. You know, we had a guitar class in high school. And you could take the guitar in school. It was the craziest thing, you know. So my brother, who was older than me, was taking classes. And I just kind of watched him and moved on from there.
What was your first guitar?
My first guitar, which I still own, is a Takamine 12-string that my father bought me. I go to the music store and I'm on this Gordon Lightfoot kick. And I buy a 12-string and I don't know how to play. And he's like, that's not a good guitar to learn on. And I'm like, you know, well, I'll take 6 strings off, you know, which actually kind of worked out because the fretboard's a little bigger. And
what were some of the early songs that you wrote and the inspiration behind them?
I have volumes. I literally have whole notebooks full of song ideas. Yeah, I can remember some pretty silly stuff. If you want to go there, I do remember writing, I Want to Sell Seashells by the Seashore and Shift My Feet in the Shifting Sand. And the first verse was a little smoking Maui Wowie, thinking about Hawaii, pina colada in my hand. Took a trip on a sailing ship, not sure when I'm coming back again.
What brought you to Lubbock, Texas?
Oh, man, you know, it was so crazy all those years growing up on that side of the border, there is no independent radio. So generally, we don't go to Lubbock, and Brandon Adams that brought me to Lubbock, he may tell the story differently. I'm going to be honest with you. But this is what I remember. I was playing a Mickey. It's called Frogs, a cigar bar in Midland. And they treated me terrible there. And I was leaving one night, and I drove by a club called the Lone Star. And it was on one of them portable signs that said, Songwriter Night. And then below that, it had all the names of the artists, but I didn't see that. I grabbed my guitar, and I go walking in, like, thinking it's open mic. And I crowds looking at me, and I walk in there, and Brandon's standing there, and he's like, and I think he's the host. So I'm like, well, where's the sign-up sheet? He goes, well, big boy, just get on up there and do a song for us then. Like, it's Red Shahan, Brandon Adams. Anyway, they let me get up on stage and sing some songs, and they were like, man, you're great. Come to us with Lubbock and open my show for me. And that's my first introduction, and I was so amazed, you know. I was like, you guys write songs and get to play them, and they let you do that in Lubbock? And they're like, you can play your own songs in Lubbock, Texas. And that was it. And I worked with Scott Ferris and the studio, and they played on the radio, and I was like, well, this has to be the coolest place on earth.
Well, one of my favorite songs, in fact, the first song that I ever heard of yours, it's a really cool song called Tonto.
Oh, you know, I wrote that. The song's been with me a long time. Thank you. It's really looking at the past and our measure in it and how we perceive ourselves, you know. It's really designed to be kids like my older brother. You know, I go outside with my Lone Ranger mask and my Lone Ranger guns, and my brother and his friends, they just beat me up and tell me, you know, just take all my stuff. So, like, you got to be Tonto. So I go inside, put on my eagle feather, and I come back out, and there's my brother and all of his friends fighting over my Lone Ranger outfit. That's kind of the song in a sum, you know.
Well, let's hear Tonto.
Reminisce. Reciting fables, run out of rhymes, and I would spill poetry on a table, and you would say, kill all the lawyers, stop the great debate. I get tired of listening to what people say they hate now. We could be cowboys, I would be Tonto, just in case your hero doesn't show. On the front porch, Lord only knows what he knows. He's been sitting around here bitching, tired of getting old, but he lights up on those days when his kid's kid comes around. He reach behind her ear, pull out a coin and say, as long as you need the money, here's two to go to the show. Here's three cause you're ready, four just in case your hero doesn't show.
Continue our conversation with Jim Dixon on More Than a Song on 89.1. Welcome back to More Than a Song. We're speaking today with West Texas singer-songwriter Jim Dixon. You cut your teeth pretty early teaching yourself recording production techniques and had your own studio. Tell us how all that came about.
I want to thank my brother. I had a brother that all those years playing in a band, it was me and him, and he was very smart. But we had the second digital recording studio in the whole state of New Mexico. Thanks to my brother's cleverness with PCs, we were able to put together a Cheetah Strip hard drive system that was one of a kind that could handle that massive amount of data coming over. It was a little trick we invented and worked on. We were able to do digital recording. We had a thing called a Session 8, record 8 tracks at a time, play 8 tracks back. Did a lot of commercial work. Went into making commercial video work and presentations and things like that, too. We did a lot of jingle work, which is great because I could bring my friends who were doing records in and have them do the jingle work to help pay for their records. So it was kind of a co-op studio once we got going. And there was never really money in it. It was my steady gig at the local honky-tonk that probably made it all work. Did last 20 years, and I think would say successfully, you know.
And all this time, you're creating your own music.
Yeah, well, just like being in a band, I keep thinking my whole youth was probably spent in the wrong direction because I was in a cover band thinking, okay, man, this is a great place to be while you write your song. It's a great place to learn how to write songs. You're playing all these great songs. Someday you'll get to do it. You know, decades pass by. And recording studio, yeah, let's get that going because someday you're going to want to record all them great songs that you're writing. And all I did was record everybody else's songs. And I can look back at the why on all this now pretty clearly as a almost 60-year-old man now and say, well, dummy, you were scared to learn. You were afraid to take those steps into the unknown, and your comfort zone was a little too comfortable, and you stayed there a bit too long.
Do you use anything like loop stations when you perform?
Sparingly, as little as I possibly can. I have a philosophy on that. I want you to remember the songs. If you left my gig talking about he had a machine up there, if I ever even heard those words, it'd be in the trash the next day. I could try to keep it, for you just don't notice it, really.
What would you classify style-wise your music?
I've had to ask a bunch of people that, and I don't know. They all just drop it right in that Americana route because you can't really go wrong there. Truth is, I have songs I've written in the grunge style. I have a 4/4 shuffle I'm begging Danny Sauter to record. That's just fantastic little 4/4 shuffle I wrote years ago. And I never set out to be an entertainer. So to me, the goal is to be a great writer. So to be a great writer, I would think, okay, well, you need to be able to write in multiple styles, many genres of music, because you may be asked to write for this thing. So all of my training was trying to be as diverse as possible. And somewhere along the lines, I really found my own voice in all of that along the way, that I got a batch of, like, if you listen to She Hates My Guitar, or very much a me song, it definitely fits well in that red dirt country music vein. But you can jump over to The Ride and be completely out of that. So I don't know where I fit in.
Well, you're basically the embodiment of the gypsy songwriter traveling musician.
I guess so.
And you basically live in your travel vehicle.
During the pandemic, I realized just how vulnerable we could be. So I worked on I got me an old Ford Travel 91, old vintage coach, and keeping my sanity more than anything. This is something I've always wanted to do. Because, you know, as a musician, you own nothing but vans. So every van I ever owned was a sketch of what was going to be my live-in van one day. And so finally, during the pandemic, of course, I almost died during the pandemic. I just went, you know, man, life is just too short not to do these things. And I go, well, who am I kidding? Like, how scary is this? This really isn't that big of a step, you know? So yeah, and it's been an adventure. It'll make you cry on the side of the road. It'll make you stand up on the top of the bus and cheer with your arms open just all by yourself. I don't recommend it. All those van life things that you see are so phony. That great picture only happens once every 6 weeks. You got many weeks of struggle and pain. And because I live off of what an artist makes, which you guys know isn't very much. So it's a small, tiny life, but it's neato, I suppose.
And I love that song, She Hates My Guitar. Where did that come from?
This is where I tell people, I write some pretty sad songs. I had to say this at my gig last night. I just make these up. This isn't real, okay? My parents love me. They weren't there much, and mom was iffy about it, but my parents love me. I make these tunes up. This isn't real. But that song comes from a life, relationships, and being a musician doing it, but it really comes from Danny Sodra's daughter just making me laugh one day. Single musician, got to be always on the hustle and taking the time out for his daughter and that dynamic. I was like, well, somebody's got to write this down. And if I was living the life, I think I'd be too close to it, make it hard to write. So I think being a writer, perspective and observation is your main tool.
Let's hear Jim Dixon's great tune, She Hates My Guitar.
She hates my guitar. Loves it when I sing. Every night I'm on the road, she hopes I break a string. She hates my guitar. I can't give up on this dream. It
You'll always be daddy's little girl. Your mama felt the same. She hates my guitar. My guitar. She loves it when I sing, even when it's on the radio, it doesn't change a thing. She hates my guitar more than these wedding rings. I guess for not what she wanted, she curses the damn thing. She hates my guitar. Life ain't fair. I curse the things I can't change. For you, I'll always be there. It's okay if you hate this guitar, 'cause right now I do too. We got to face the truth. Loves it when I sing. Every night I'm on the road, she hopes I break a string.
We'll be right back to continue our conversation with Jim Dixon on More Than a Song on 89.1. Welcome back to More Than a Song. Our guest today is Jim Dixon. You have, for many years now, been an independent businessman as a performing and songwriting musician. Describe that world.
Well, a lot of it is the restaurant Mickey and the gig downtown. That's not what it's about. You know, in a way, I look at it, you know, the girl runs out of the rodeo and the horse, like, before the rodeo starts, she's like, whoa, she flies, she goes back in. That's it. That's what the gig is. To me, the gig serves one purpose. I'm a writer. I didn't get into this to be a performer. You know, I realize if I'm not entertaining, I don't get to work. So being good at performing matters greatly. But to me, the reason for the gig is so I can see if my works are working. If you come to my show, you know, you may hear one or two, three covers, but really, those are going to be mostly my songs. And sometimes that's not always unexpected. Yeah, I get to literally watch in real time whether the song I wrote affects you, and I'm checking the vibe of the room. I'm feeling how the room feels back to me while I'm performing. And to me, that's the part of that. That's the rodeo. Run out there with the flag and run it back in. Then you get home and you're like, okay, man, that seemed to get their attention. That song was an epic fail. I'm in that zone. I want to be in the zone where it's flowing through me.
Well, you're a very recognizable fixture in the Lubbock music scene. Describe the Lubbock music scene as the way you see it.
What you have is an incredible amount of talented people. And being from out past the perimeter, where it's zombie land. Most of those venues in little towns, the way out there, don't have songwriters or great entertainers. And so they congregate here. Can they find a home here? And it's hard to leave. you know, when you find your place and you're like, you know, I have other creatives around me that are inspiring me to be better. I mean, the best way to get good is just surround yourself with better than you and just like let it wash on you. You know what I mean? And
so there's a young teenage boy out there, just got his first guitar. He's got a little talent. What is your advice?
Kid's name, Tracy Nichols, coming up down that Ryan Bingham path. He caught me at a songwriter thing and asked me that very question. A talented young fella, definitely. You know, I just could look in his eyes and I just know the difference. For you, this is medicine. You're going to need this your whole life. And I would not recommend this for anybody as a career path, especially now. But for some of us, there's not a choice in this. This is medicine. What can I do to keep you from getting hurt? Writing songs and doing what you're doing, I mean, this is your life source. I get it. It's not for everybody. I'll try to help, but not because I think you're going to go on to be famous, because I just don't want you to get hurt. And getting hurt is what happens out here. This is one of the most brutal industries you can possibly be in. And the mental game to have to go with it, I have how I handle it. I go deep. I'm in it for the art and the other side. If you play the popularity game, you can get really off track. You can seriously hurt your mental image of yourself and believing in what other people say and trying to chase down the I'm on the charts guy. Or how do you validate yourself as an artist? Today, there's so much pressure put on your image and can you carry the image of a big star and all this? And I'll just tell you, man, for you young writers out there, you're the caretaker of these works. You're the painter who painted Napoleon. You're not Napoleon. So give yourself a break, man. Enjoy the craft of it. You don't have to be the hero of the tale. Just tell me the story about a hero. That's good enough.
Where do you see the industry going forward?
Well, it can't sustain what we have. It's controlled by people that are not musicians, so it's completely unhelpful to the craft of creation and music. I could quote Prince, Tom Petty. I mean, I could go through the line. They've been saying this for my whole life, but it's definitely at a peak of its worst is now, I do believe, at its cracking point now. Because to be successful in music, you got to write a popular song. You got to write the most popular song. So you're not up in the top 10, top 40. Well, you're just not going to make any money. But you get where I'm going with this. So if a person gives me one penny and they listen to my song, Jim, I like that song. Here's one penny. You just paid me 100.4 times more than Spotify did. I'll let that sink in for a minute. I don't have control as inflation goes up. I can't go, hey, I should charge a little more for my wares on my front porch here that I'm selling you my songs. I can't do that by law. I can't change the price of my wares. I can't turn them up or down. Can't take them away. There's no rarity to my wares. If there's one, there's a gazillion. And with any product, if microphones were free, everybody would own one. The price of them would be worth nothing, correct? So you've completely devalued the value of our craft. And then you told us to go sell some T-shirts for you. And so every time we sell a T-shirt instead of a record, we further devalue the widget, if you will, of business of music. The value falls away every day and keeps falling as we continue down this path. But it's a brave new world and it's a wild west. And obviously what we have cannot sustain because it doesn't lend to creativity. It lends to marketivity. And no artist is going to want to be involved in that. But truthfully, I can't believe we let game show contestants choose our rock stars for us. But the path got us here. I think in the future, we're going to look back and they're going to go, those guys literally gave away their music for thumbs up emojis. What a bunch of dummies, you know? Why did they do that? I hope the future understands we were tricked. We were doped. You know, we didn't realize what social media was going to be.
And you write good songs. One of my favorite songs is called Tonight I'm on a Roll.
I'm on a roll. My favorite thing. You know, Brian McCrae's my hero. Golly, he's just a world-class musician and has helped me record and helped me with my studies. And, you know, and I walked in the studio one day and I'd written that and he just smiled. We just smiled. Jerry walked in the door. And I mean, 20 minutes later, we walked out with a record. Music for the fame of music to be surrounded by these people that are just so talented. And I walk in the door and I'm like, guys, I want this 40 jazz feel. It wasn't about making money on a recording session. It was like, oh, we got this and just knocked it out of the park. And one of my greatest studio experiences is that song.
We want to hear you perform that live.
I'd love to do that song for you. Light from the bar,
casting shadows on his hair, broken hearts. There's a strum of a guitar, and his fat cats in the corner all smoking cigars. Look at me, I'm rolling sevens. I could live in hell or I could die here in heaven. The sun comes up, I'll go. For tonight I am on a roll. Lady Luck, she's a girl in a red dress with a little more love. The one that I left at home, but by now she's packed up and gone. But to regret, I probably will. It comes in the daylight, and baby, right now we got time to kill. The sun comes up, I go. For tonight I am on a roll. When the sun comes up, I will. I'll have to go. For tonight I'm on a roll.
Jim, thank you so much for being our special guest today on More Than a Song.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for supporting all the creatives out there that do it. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to More Than a Song. I'm your host, Kerry Banks. This show was produced by Chuck Luck. Our guest today was singer-songwriter Jim Dixon. Join us next Friday morning for More Than a Song at 10:30 on 89.1. For more information on More Than a Song, and if you'd like to hear previous episodes, visit ttupublicmedia.org.